I be with you. On this Lenten Sunday, we listen to a reading of the good news that comes to us from Luke, who tells us that all of the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and murmuring, saying, "This man welcomes sinners and he eats with them." So Jesus told them a parable. There was a man who had two sons. And the younger son said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." And so the father divided his property between them. And a few days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and traveled to a distant country. And there he squandered his property in wild living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in great need. And so he went out, and he hired himself to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. And the young man would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. Then he came to himself and he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? And here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy even to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he went off and went to his father. But while he was still far away, his father saw him coming and was filled with compassion, and he ran out and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son began to say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out the robe, the best one, and put it on him, and put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it, and let's eat and celebrate. For this son of mine, who was dead, is now alive again. He who was lost is found.' And they all began to celebrate. Now, his older brother was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard the music and the dancing. And he called out one of the slaves and asked what was going on. And the slave replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fat calf, because he's now back safe and sound.' Then the older brother became angry and refused to go in. And so his father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you. I've never disobeyed one of your commands. Yet you've never given me even a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. Now, when this son of yours comes back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you kill the fatted calf for him.' The father said to him, 'Son, you're always with me. All that I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours, who was dead, has come back to life. He who was lost has been found.'" The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
We have just heard, perhaps, the most beautiful and the most shocking of all of the parables of Jesus. In the parable, the prodigal son leaves home as a hobo, and he returns as a hobo. And he becomes, in the process, patron saint of all of us hobos, all of us Lenten pilgrims. Hobos, we know, are usually lumped together
tramps, bums, and vagabonds. But there's a big distinction. As the old expression stated it, a hobo works and wanders. A tramp doesn't work and wanders. And a bum drinks and doesn't work and wanders, but not far enough. Some scholars believe that hobo comes from hoe boys, the garden hoe, the farmers' sons who hit the road, much like the prodigal, seeking their fortune someplace other than on the farm. While other scholars believe it's from homeward bound, first two letters, ho-ward bound, Civil War veterans who were doing odd jobs as they worked their way home. These vagabonds of the late 1800s and early 1900s enriched our language with some very wealthy words, like handouts, punk, crummy, flea bags, flop houses, moochers, and panhandlers, just to mention a few. Hobos are our mentors, along with being patron saints, because we're all hobos, we're homeward bound. Even if we're camped out, big house on the boulevard, or under some bridge, we're all hobos. And you say, mentors? Oh yeah, the classic image that you see with clowns, the stick with the little red bandana, with the hobos' possessions, they teach us how to live simply. They teach us how to travel light. They're homeless. They teach us how to be homeless. We make the mistake of trying to make this piece of real estate home. And they also, especially in today's gospel, that liturgy teaches about God's love. In this very significant, and I might add, shocking parable, I'm surprised that the church even allows it to be read. They, of course, are counting on the fact that you don't listen to anything you hear. It contains the theology of Jesus about forgiveness and God's love. It's so easy for us, you know, to judge the poor and those on welfare and the homeless, to lump them all into bums, drunks, lazy no goods who won't work. God spoke to us in Samuel. God said, not as humans see, does God see. Humans see the appearance, but God looks into the heart. In February, the Kansas City Star did an article on hobos, bums, and the homeless. It was entitled, A Simple Matter of Survival. And in the article, they speak about a particular homeless man. His name is Kyle Kevin. He's 48 years old. And he said, I'm called here by the spirits and visions. And he has spent 12 years camping under a grove of locust trees. He hasn't once bathed during those 12 years, nor has he had a cold, even though he wears no shoes. He makes it through the winter by huddling under a plastic lean-to with seven mangy cats, cardboard wicks floating in cans of cooking oil provide a flicker of heat and light. Kevin insists, I'm not homeless. I'm a religious hermit. What's the difference? Somebody in rags? Who hasn't bathed 12 years? Is he a saint, a mystic? Or is he a mentally ill drifter? Is he another St. Francis of Assisi? Is that hobo another St. Benedict Labre. Benedict was born in 1748. He lived during the time of the American Revolution. He took the gospel seriously. He took it seriously. So seriously that he could never fit into any religious order. He entered three of them, and they all threw him out, the Trappist, the Carthusians, and the Cistercians. And unable to live this radical kind of gospel he wanted to, he made a pilgrimage to the shrines of Europe in absolute poverty. He spent 7 years in Rome, much like Kyle Kevin did. He slept at night in the ruins of the Colosseum. By day, he prayed with great fervor in the churches of Rome. Lice, fleas, unbathed. And after his death, the church canonized him, made him a saint. He's the patron saint of beggars. We all would like to come to church and pray with a saint. Like to sit next to a saint. But not if that saint hadn't bathed in 12 years, had lice. Oh no. Yet God looks not at appearances, whether someone has taken a bath or they haven't taken a bath. God looks at the heart and sees the garden of the soul. The garden of the soul in their heart. And that's how God judges. In this springtime, in the First Testament, there is that beautiful song, the Song of Songs. For see, the winter is past, and the rains are over and gone, and the flowers have appeared in the land. And the song of the dove is heard. Hark, my lover! My lover, here he comes, springing across the mountains, leaping across the hills. My lover is like a young stag. That was the song of the father in the parable. That's what he sang, not when the son came and knocked at the door, but when he saw the son far off. Hark! My lover, my son, here he comes. And then he threw a grand feast for that hobo, that homeward bound beggar who knew the feel of flop houses. Flop houses where you flop down on a vermin infested mattress, a flea bag. The prodigal had been a moocher. It's an old Anglo-Saxon word that means to kind of lurk around places, and mooching then became not only to lurk around, hang around, it came to mean to beg. And beggars can't be choosing. The lowest odd job for a Jew would be to feed the pigs. The boy comes to his senses, though, and he hits the road. And when he gets home, there's nothing crummy. There's nothing crummy about the father's love and party. Crummy's hobo slang, 1900 to 1930. It means crumbs. The crumbs are what's left over from bread. And that's what hobos got. Not good bread. Crumbs. It was handed out to them, that handouts. This Lenten reflection challenges us to look at one of the major works of Lent, which is certainly reform and prayer and charity. Ha! Look at our charity. It's crummy. It's crummy charity. It's the crumbs of the surplus. Welfare reform. Oh, that has such a nice ring to it. Welfare reform. I mean, who among us could object to reforming any social system, even the church? But isn't welfare reform exactly the same as ethnic cleansing? Ethnic cleansing means murder and rape and the destruction of an entire people because of their religion and their nationality. Welfare reform has nothing to do with reform. It has to do with crummy charity, reducing the amount of money we give to those who are in need, regardless of their need. Lent is about charity justice. There should be no pause between that. They're Siamese twins. They're joined at the hip. You can't separate charity and justice. Because our money is not our money. It doesn't belong to us. We're only stewards of our money. And we are obliged in divine justice to share. We who have are obliged in justice to share what we have with those who lack the basic necessities of life. So we're confronted with one of the big issues when you elect somebody to Congress. Are you pro-life or pro-choice? And 90% of us are pro-choice. Yes, it is my choice. Ha ha, what I do with my money. And I choose not to share that money with those no-good bums who don't work and those pregnant girls who aren't married. That's my choice. If I'm pro-life, certainly that means more than one little issue. Abortion. Pro-life means I am pro-food, shelter, clothing, education, health care, an opportunity to work, jobs and training. Those are life issues. So, what are you? Pro-choice or pro-life? Indeed, those people who are on welfare should get a job and should go to work. And 90%, if not 95% of them, want to go to work. If we are pro-life, then we must provide jobs, training for jobs. We must pay more taxes to provide that work. If we wish to reform welfare. But where in the legislation that is being trumpeted so loudly today is there any money going to create new jobs or training for people to get new jobs? Congress, elected for being pro-life, has pledged the opposite. Congressman from Texas, when speaking about the minimum wage, said, "I will fight any increase in the minimum wage with every fiber in my body." Who here wants to work for $4.25 an hour? You think you can maintain your home, run your automobile, buy the clothing you wear for $4.25 an hour? As Lenten hobos, we should fight with every, what was the term he used? Fiber in our being. That injustice. You say, well, what business of ours is the concern for welfare and what happens to the poor? Well, we heard it. We're ambassadors, aren't we? We're ambassadors. We're members of a diplomatic corps. We represent a foreign power who is appealing to the world through us. So when people encounter us, who do they encounter? A royal, generous, loving kingdom or a crummy kingdom? Crummy. Isn't our prayer crummy? Isn't our love for God crummy? I mean, it's what's left over. It's just the crumbs. Look at your time clock. Look at your energy bank account. Don't you give God the crumbs? We treat God like a tramp. God has to come to our door, put his hand out, and beg for what? 30 minutes a week? 45 minutes a week? When was the last time you threw a feast for God? I'm talking about feasting. We know that this parable is all about God's forgiveness. It's about sin and mistakes. And we know that Lent began as a season of reform. We put on ashes as a sign that we were penitents. We were penitential. We were sorry for something. What were we sorry for? We broke a law? We failed to keep some regulation? Or did we have the penitence of a lover who feels such anguish because they hurt someone they really loved? True sorrow for sin has to do about that sense of, I hurt someone who I love. You say, well, how can you hurt God? God's beyond being hurt. Ah, remember what Jesus said. Whatever you do to the least of my brethren, you do to me. Whatever we do to the homeless and the poor, we do to Christ. And that should make us feel real sorrow. And consider the sorrow of the prodigal son. I mean, he was serious about going home. Could we say with him today, this morning, or on our deathbed, I've not been a good lover. I've broken the great commandment. Not the sixth commandment. Great commandment is not the sixth commandment. I've broken the great commandment. I haven't loved you with all my heart and all my soul. Could we start for home like the prodigal son, honestly saying, we are worthy of heaven? We want, if we got in at all, we'd be willing just to be the servant to the saints. You know, work in the kitchen. Sweep floors, do odd jobs, be a yard man in paradise. Anything to get in. Because injustice, that's all we would be worthy to. The prayer that we say before Holy Communion, oh Lord, I am not worthy. That's the prayer at heaven's gate. Oh, Lord, I am not worthy, was the prayer of the prodigal, who knew that he had failed in love. I doubt seriously if any of us would ask God just to be a servant in heaven. No, we think we're in for something better. Let's be honest. Talking about Holy Communion. Don't we come to church like tramps, looking for handouts? Don't we come as tramps who won't work? We're not worthy of the communion of Christ unless we have been working, speaking, acting, voting for justice. Let's be honest. We're panhandlers. That hobo term developed from the Spanish word pan, meaning bread. People who put their hand out for bread, panhandlers. At communion time, when we put our hand out for the panis, the pan, the bread of Christ, have we worked, or have we piously said our little prayers? Blind to those in. You know, the hobos had a tradition of leaving chalk marks on fences, and posts, and garages, and barns. It was a signal to other vagabonds who came after them. One wonders, on the way home, did the prodigal see this sign, chalk sign? It's two circles interlocking. I propose to you that he saw that on a fence on the way to his father's farm. It says to hobos, don't give up. Don't give up. Trust. If you're truly sorry, trust. God's going to run three-fourths of the way to meet you. And God's going to give you more than a handout. God's going to give you a feast. Trust. And as the prodigal approached the farm, this was the hobo sign that was on the barn. It's a almost child's drawing, very crude little house with a doorway. And across the doorway, there's a slash. Hobo slang, well-guarded house. Well-guarded house. We, as God's ambassadors, we, as God's keepers and dispensers of love on this earth, we, as the church, this is our sign. We demand penance from anybody who wants to return. We demand that sinners be purged by doing time in the big house of purgatory. Every home has its purgatory. Oh, I'll forgive you, but only after you've suffered enough. It's really strange, you know. Jesus left out purgatory. I know it's one of the dogmas of the church. Strange, he left it out. Maybe he forgot. No purgatory. No penance. Immediate acceptance. How sad it is. How sad it is. That this is our sign. Sign on our hearts. Sign on our churches. Well guarded. Don't come in here if you've made a mistake in marriage and been remarried. Don't come in here if you're a woman and expect that you will be given equal justice and equal ministerial rights. Don't come in here if your sexual orientation is anything different than the majority. How sad. That Jesus shows to us another God, and that's the good news. All you have to do is be a hobo. Be homeward bound, and God rushes out to greet you. And there's nothing crummy. This is another hobo sign. It's a couple of circles, one on top of another. It's the sign of a cat. And when that was chalked onto a barn, door, or fence, you know what it meant? Kind-hearted, generous woman. Oh, if this sign could be chalked onto church doors, what a difference it would make. Kind-hearted, generous mother. Because we talk about the church as Holy Mother Church, but it's not Holy Mother Church. It's unholy older brother. Unholy older brother that is the church. And we must remember, friends, it is not the bishops, not the Pope, not the Vatican. We are the church. We are the church. Lent's a great season for handouts. It begins with a handout, free ashes. And then just when it's about to end, there's free palm. I think on this Sunday, it'd be great if we handed out to everybody chalk. A piece of chalk, and you could go home. Chalk the door of your house. What you think, or have your family members do that, what your heart is like, which sign would you find that would represent your heart? Well-guarded house, generous, kind-hearted woman.